This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm John Gatto. We continue this week with our series of election specials, focusing on races that affect western Wisconsin residents. Voters in Wisconsin's 94th Assembly District have the same choice of candidates that they had 2 years ago. Republican State Representative Mike Hipsch of West Salem has been in office for 16 years. He's facing another challenge from Democrat Cheryl Hancock of Holman, a longtime school board member and the executive director of the Scenic Bluffs chapter of the American Red Cross. They're being questioned by our moderator, Dick Mile, a former La Crosse Tribune political reporter. The conversation opens with both candidates discussing the differences between now and 2 years ago when they first ran against each other. Here are Mike Hipsch and Cheryl Hancock.
Well, the difference is the remarkable decline that we've seen in our economy, the loss of jobs, the urgency that we have to really turn our economy and our country around. I think a huge difference is that 2 years ago we were about to embark on a massive liberal experiment of increased spending, increased government control, really an unprecedented expansion of government. And now we're 2 years into that, and it's being repudiated across the country. And I think that the voters recognize that that's not the direction we can go. So the difference is remarkable, as you know, just 2 years ago, as to what people at that time were thinking was going to be hope and change. And now the ramifications of the massive expansion of government and spending and the concern of the public over the economy in Wisconsin, the economy in the country, and the fact that we need to get this country and certainly Wisconsin back to work again.
Has that increase that you talk about, has that been true in state government as well?
It has, in fact. You know, if you take a look at the state budget, in just as we started this biennium just 2 years ago, we were spending with all funds about $56 billion over that two-year period. We increased that, the Democrats who took over control of the governor's office and both chambers of the legislature, increased that to $62 billion. On top of that, we went up in borrowing that is unprecedented. The borrowing is at a level that we've never seen before, so much so that for the first time we will be spending over $500 million every year just in our interest payments. So, yeah, you've seen massive increase in spending and growth in government in Madison as well.
Cheryl, how do you see the financial picture and how do you respond to what Mike said?
Well, I look back at the time 2 years ago, and Mike was the Speaker of the Assembly and certainly had been a member of the Assembly for 14 years at that time and now 16. And I would say that many credit the financial crisis that we find our state in to some of the policies and things that the majority party, at that time brought to Madison, some of the changes, some of the things that they did, like at a time when we had actually had some reserve funds instead of keeping those and having a rainy day fund, which I think most families understand that you have to save and have a savings account for a time when you may have emergencies. The state of Wisconsin spent millions of dollars to send that money back to state residents, and I think they did it purely for political purposes to get some political capital out of that. So there were a number of things over the 16 years as the speaker and as a member of the party that was in the majority, I think, that brought our party or brought our state to the financial crisis that we're seeing right now. I don't think you get in that kind of a crisis in 1 year. And in fact, in late 2008 is when we started to see the economy fall and see the things that how they were impacting our state in a negative way. And so I don't think that you can say that it was what's happened the last 2 years that is responsible for the financial crisis that we're seeing the state in.
No, I would completely agree with that. I think that you can't just look at the last 2 years. You should look at the last 10. What Cheryl's talking about is in 1999 when we passed the budget. We had 6 months after we passed the budget, we had $1 billion more in the state treasury than we had anticipated having just 6 months prior. That was mainly and only because of the strength of the economy. The American economy and the Wisconsin economy was expanding so great and so strongly that we decided to send some of that additional money that the state was getting back to the taxpayers because we hadn't budgeted for it. We didn't need it. And so we should send that back to the taxpayers as far as a rebate check. And we sent that back, as did so many other states, recognizing that we had a windfall of money because of the strength of our economy. Now flash forward 10 years ahead. The only thing that's different is 8 years of Governor Jim Doyle and remarkable spending increases, borrowing increases, a complete disregard of the decline in the economy that began in 2011 with September 11th and just became more and more exacerbated throughout
2001.
I'm sorry, September 11, 2001. You know, if you just look at the disaster, I think, that has been the Doyle administration, we are going to look back and see that the legacy of Jim Doyle is remarkable deficits, unprecedented deficits, and certainly the borrowing level that will never be rivaled, I think, in Wisconsin as to the amount of debt that we are going to be saddled with.
But I don't think you can credit Jim Doyle alone. I think that if you look at government in Wisconsin, there are the legislature also plays a part in that. And Mike was the Speaker of the Assembly during that time. His party was in power for most of that time, only the last 2 years that they weren't in power when Jim Doyle became governor. And so there has to be, I think they need to go hand in hand. And just as Mike's comments about Governor Doyle's, I would also say that the Republican majority is responsible, as is the Democratic Senate. I think that we need to look at things that were passed, things that were done that are responsible. So it's not just one part alone. I think we need to look at the legislature, both on the Assembly and the Senate, and the things they did. Something that we've tried to take Mike to task with, and a compromise that he made was the patients fund, the compensation fund. And while, he's indicated that the Democrats made him do that or it was a compromise, it was a compromise. And I think when you're in Madison and you're talking about fiscal responsibility, you can't compromise certain things. And I think, and I have gone on record and said that's something I would not have voted for, just as Jennifer Schilling did not vote for that. I would not have compromised on that. And if I was in Mike's spot, I would not have compromised for that. It was a detriment. We're seeing the impact of that right now, $200 million $200 million that we are now, in addition to what we're being faced by the state budget shortfalls, add that to it, and plus the interest. Yeah,
let me ask you both about the structural deficit. Exactly how does that work, and what would we have to do to actually balance the budget in a way that everyone, including accountants, would agree is balanced? You can take that, Mike.
Okay, sure. well, I let me just also answer back to what Cheryl said. I think she's right. You do need to compare what was going on through the entire Doyle administration with the different budgets that were introduced and passed. And the nice thing is that we actually have to, in each of the two houses, have to pass our own budget. And the governor has to introduce his own. And so if you go back and take a look at exactly what happened in those 8 years under the Doyle administration, take a look at Governor Doyle's budget that he introduced, take a look at the one that the Republicans passed, and recognize that when I was Speaker, we spent $1 billion less in our budget than Governor Doyle introduced in his. We reduced the spending in so many different areas, recognizing that the economy had slowed and we could only spend what we were bringing in. If you remember correctly, we delayed that budget for 4 months, 5 months past the deadline because I would not compromise with the governor on increasing spending and taxes on people across the state to the level that he wanted to do. And so, that is a major concern. Now, when you take a look at the budget we have right now, the governor has continued to push expenditures and borrowing and a number of things off into the future years, so much so that we've even passed an amendment, the Doyle Frankenstein veto amendment, that is going to limit the ability of governors to increase spending in the future through their veto pen. But he is still leaving us with a legacy of $2.7 billion deficit. And it is a structural deficit because the one thing that is important to note, Dick, is that here in Wisconsin, we have a constitutional amendment that says we cannot have a deficit in our budget. And so we will end this fiscal year, which ends next June 30th, we'll end with money in the bank. It won't be a lot, but we will have a reserve fund there that has some dollars available. The concern we have is that the commitments we've made for spending in future and really the payments that Governor Doyle has pushed off into the future are going to leave us about $2.7 billion short if we were going to spend at that level based upon knowing what we're going to bring in tax revenue, even projecting increase in the economy or increase in tax revenue or anything along those lines, we'll still be $2.7 billion short. Well, your question was, how do we balance that? How do we go into this? I think first and foremost what we need to recognize is that we cannot go back to the taxpayers and ask for more. And that's one of the biggest differences that you're going to find between myself and Cheryl Hancock. She has increased taxes time and again on her 14 years in the Homeland School Board. I have fought against tax increases every single year I've been there. As a matter of fact, when the Republicans were in control in the 90s and early 2000, we said every year we were in the majority, we would cut taxes. And we lived up to that. We cut taxes every single year. And so what we're facing is the need to take a look at that we are going to have to go into this budget and recognize that we cannot go back to the taxpayers and ask for more money. We're going to have to go with just natural economic growth. And we're going to have to look at ways that we're going to do some honest budgeting. One of the things I've talked about is that we have a little over 4,000 employees in employee positions in state government that are not filled. They've been vacant at least a year, and yet we still tax the taxpayers for those vacancies, and we still send the money back to those agencies as if they were actually there. We need to get back to honest budgeting and recognize
how much money is involved with that.
Well, it depends on how you want to break it down between GPR and segregated. But when you talk about all funds, you're talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not millions of dollars, as far as just the employees there. Now you also take a look at the benefits that the state employees have. Right now, state employees have a retirement fund, like many employees in companies across the country, and there's two components to it. One is the amount that the employee contributes, and one is the amount that the employer contributes. The difference is, for state employees, the employer contributes both sides of that. That's unprecedented in any other area, certainly in private sector employees. And so what we're going to suggest is that, hey, state employees should pay their own part of their retirement. Now we're talking about several hundred million dollars.
Let me stop you there, and let's give Cheryl an opportunity to address the tax issues, and we'll come back to more solutions.
Great. Well, thank you. First, I do have to go back to the budget, the 2008 era, and just say that we work in our professional lives and as we work in education, it's the final product that's judged. And while Mike may say that the assembly put out a budget that spent $1 billion less or whatever, it's the final product that Mike should be judged on and held accountable for. And that's all that I'm talking about in that discussion. As far as my increasing taxes every year as a member of the school board, that's the nature of the school board funding or the school funding formula. We're required to take that vote each and every year. And as a growing school district, the school district residents actually came forward and increased taxes voluntarily. And I think it's a little disingenuous to say that while I've increased taxes, he hasn't. The fact is, the state of Wisconsin has collected more in income tax, more in sales tax in all of the years that Mike has served in the legislature. While it may not take an official vote to do that, that is what has occurred. And talking about the budgeting, I do agree with Mike that we need to have a more open and honest budgeting format, and that there are things that have been suggested that we could do to look at balancing the budget. What I look at, and I'm not advocating for more taxes, I'm just saying let's look at the tax structure that we have in the state of Wisconsin. Owning a home does not any longer equate to wealth or the ability to pay. And if you look at the statistics from the state of Wisconsin, we rely on property taxes much higher than most states, than the majority of the states in the nation. But our income tax, our sales tax are areas where the ability to purchase and your income may be more may better reflect the ability to pay. And so that's what I'm talking about when I talk about changing the school funding formula, is let's look at how that is actually formulated. Where do we get those monies? And so when I say we need to look at all ends and all options, which then Mike equates that I want to raise more taxes or increase taxes, that isn't necessarily the fact that, or what I'm looking at. I'm looking at how do we tax and is there a better way to do that in the state of Wisconsin?
High-speed rail, pros and cons. Mike, are you against it?
No, what I'm against is an additional incredible expenditure from the federal mm-hmm. government for something that may or may not expand our economy. And what I've said is if we're going to take a look at the economy of the 21st century, I don't believe it necessarily lies in a fixed rail system between Chicago and St. Paul. Would there be a benefit to that? Sure. There's no question. Are there better ways that we can spend that money? There's no question about that either. I mean, I have been talking with the Department of Transportation for a number of years about how we can get four lanes between Onalaska and West Salem on Highway 16. It's mm-hmm. something we've wanted for a long time, and frankly, because of some of the decisions of Governor Doyle as far as of stealing money out of the transportation fund, that project, like hundreds of other projects around this state, have been delayed or, in fact, just flat out canceled. So if we're going to take a look at how we're going to spend money in transportation, use it in ways that we know are going to work to expand our economy. 80% of jobs in Wisconsin are within 4 miles of a major highway. That's a fact. That's something we can actually point to and say, gee, that's the direction we should be going. If we want to take a look at the economy of the 21st century, take the $800 million that they want to put into a train and put it into high-speed internet. Make sure that we get a high-speed internet into Osseo and Hillsboro and Whitehall and Viroqua.
Now,
that's
that
where the economy
in the cards,
of the future
though,
is going.
In terms of this particular money.
Well,
again, hang on a second. Again,
okay.
That's because the federal government is telling us this is where you have to spend it.
Sure.
Excuse me, folks, that's our money. We tell you where we're going to spend it. You don't tell us. I mean, the Secretary of Transportation came here and said, you don't have a choice. We're going to build it here. That's all there is to it. I cannot believe we have elected officials or their cabinet secretary saying, look, I don't care what you guys feel about how we're going to spend your money. This is how we're going to do it. That's the problem we have in government today, the arrogance mm-hmm. and the lack of connection with what's really going on with the people of this country and the fact that they are struggling just to make their ends meet, and we continue to spend $800 million on a train that very few people who are listening right now will ever actually get a chance to ride.
Well, that's not true. The businesses that were surveyed in the La Crosse area, the results, I think LADGO shows the results, is 87% of them said that they would utilize high-speed rail. So it's just anecdotal that they won't use it. I think the survey, the statistics show that they will use it. And it's not a matter of it's not unlike the state government giving the schools money and saying, this is what you have to use this money for, or you have to do this, and here's the money that we'll give you. It's the same idea. It's the same. Money comes down. It's segregated. It's like the stealing of the transportation money, which Mike alluded to, which he actually voted for when he was a representative. The budget he passed, he voted for that budget, where monies were taken not only out of the patient's compensation fund, but from transportation fund. So I think that it's interesting that he would point that out and call it stealing when his responsibility to that was that other people made him do it. But I do think that a high-speed rail, number one, can bring new jobs to Wisconsin. So if we're talking about jobs, I think that's one way that we can bring new jobs to Wisconsin. Some of them will be temporary, but for the most part, there will be good new jobs, good-paying jobs for Wisconsin. Number two, it's what it does for the environment. One of the things we've seen ourselves, and I think you see those valleys, peaks and valleys of when gas prices are high, all we hear about is we need to reduce our reliance on oil, foreign oil and all of that. Now, gas prices aren't so high right now, so you really don't hear that. But I think we need to be forward-thinking and realize that we can reduce our dependence on automobiles through bringing the high-speed rail, through whether it's just between Chicago and Milwaukee and Madison, but through La Crosse. And we've said many times, if it doesn't get to Madison, it ain't coming to La Crosse. And so we need representation on this side of the state that's going to support high-speed rail coming to Wisconsin so that it has a chance to come through La Crosse.
Let's talk about nuclear power, which Mike has been advocating for. Make your case, your very, very brief
very brief, case. Okay. Well, you know, as you know, Dick, you and I have talked about it many times, but nuclear power first came to my attention when some Onalaska high school students wrote me about it better than 10 years ago. And when I took a look at it, I recognized that not only is nuclear, as far as the environmental impact is concerned, the cleanest of energies that we have available to us, as far as from beginning to end, from the first time you start to think about building a nuclear plant to its shutting down, the carbon footprint, there is none essentially as far as any of the dangers there. What you have is a very clean source of energy that in Wisconsin we're using 20% of our energy source comes from nuclear right now, from three plants on the eastern side of the state. We could expand on those sites, and we could find ways that we would, in fact, reduce that carbon footprint by expanding in a very clean energy source. The challenge we have is not even necessarily the storage or the use of the spent fuel, but the political demagoguery that is built around the spent fuel. The idea now is that we are going to have to put that fuel away, and we have to store that. And Congress has come out and said we now need to store that for a million years. A million years. That's not a joke. I mean, they want that stored away for a million years, so that it will have no environmental impact, nor will we even be able to access it. I think it's ridiculous to think that we won't know how to, in fact, use that spent fuel for very good, strong energy purposes within the next 50 years. I mean, the technology that continues to advance in so many areas will certainly expand in nuclear, and is why I continue to support it as one of the sources of energy that we should have in our whole portfolio of energy sources for this country.
Cheryl, what's your view on nuclear power?
I think we certainly should consider it, but before we take any action, we need any action about the moratorium or eliminating the moratorium. We do need to address the issue of where that spent fuel is going to be stored. I think that it's not just a political issue. It's a very real issue that people are concerned about, and so we do need to address it. And as I pointed out in 2008, and I will point out again, that if it's not in Nevada, the place where the nuclear storage spent fuel is coming to, the second place identified is in upper Wisconsin, northern Wisconsin. And I just don't think that is something that the state of Wisconsin is looking at. And so if we have a proliferation of new nuclear plants in the state, of course, that has to be addressed. And do we really want it addressed or stored in our pristine northern Wisconsin? I think the other issue about nuclear power is the cost to build. I think if you look at plants that are being built, they take a long time to build, and the cost of them to build, most of those organizations that are building them go to the state government and ask them for money to help to build that. So again, it's a issue with the economy. I don't think Wisconsin government can afford to support those organizations in building those.
A political conversation between the candidates for Wisconsin's 94th State Assembly District, incumbent Republican Mike Hipsch of West Salem and Democrat challenger Cheryl Hancock of Holman. They were questioned by former La Crosse Tribune political reporter Dick Mile. The entire conversation is available on our website at wpr.org/lacrosse. We'll continue our series of political conversations coming up in the second part of this edition of Newsmakers. We'll hear from candidates in the 95th Assembly District.
I'm a conservative. I don't believe that we need any new taxes.
The thing that I hear the most when I'm out in the community and going door to door, that people are still very anxious about our economy and job security.
Incumbent Democrat Jennifer Schilling is being challenged by Republican Nick Charles, both of La Crosse. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm John Gatto. To hear this or other recent editions of Newsmakers, we invite you to visit our website at wpr.org/lacrosse. In addition to Newsmakers, you'll find archived reports and special series produced by the La Crosse News Bureau, as well as network news from Wisconsin Public Radio and National Public Radio. And if you'd like to comment on this week's Newsmakers or have suggestions for future shows, you'll also find links to our producers and staff. That and more, all available online at wpr.org/lacrosse.